So what we're going to be doing today is discussing actually the instructions of a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. And I think that it's an area that perhaps we don't explore often enough. The concept of Dama Shetashiv, to know what to respond. How do you respond to questions that are posed regarding Yiddishkeit in general and obviously specific areas which we'll look at. The starting point is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Everyone have a page. There's two pages, so the one that's got a heading and then the one without the heading. Okay, there may not be enough copies, just if you might need to share. So the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos in the second chapter says, Rabbi Elazar says, Have shokud lilmoy Torah, that you should be very established, you should be fixed to learn Torah, which is what we all live for. We spend so much time trying to learn. You also need to know how to respond to an apikoires. Now the word apikoires is interesting what the source of the word is. The Mefarshim say that it comes from the root of hefker. It's someone that's loose. It's someone that's broken out of the constraints of Torah and mitzvahs. What's also interesting is that there's a very similar Greek word, the Greek word Epicurus, who was a particular Greek philosopher who believed in having as much physical pleasure as you could possibly have. And in fact, there's an English expression, Epicurean delight. Epicurean means taking a lot of pleasure. Now, today we don't have these guys, but in the old days, Epicureans were people that believed that life was there to get as much pleasure as possible, which is quite common today. But the interesting thing was that they held that as soon as it ran out of pleasure, then you took your own life. And that's why we hold, you'll see in the Svarim, very strong things written about someone that takes their own life. They're not buried in a Jewish cemetery, etc. Whereas practically today we'd never do that. Because in the old days, someone that took their own life took it out of from a philosophical position. Whereas today, lo'aleinu, it's like many other illnesses and that's how we treat it. So the starting point is to realize that as a Jew we learn a lot of Torah. That means have a shokud lilmoy Torah. And that's to be insular, to learn on your own and to be in your own world. But you also need to know how to respond to challenges that come from the outside world. And then he says, the third point he makes, B'dalif ne'miyata omel, you should know in front of whom you are working. That means Hashem knows the truth. V'ne'man hu ba'melachtecho, shi'ishalem lecho schar pu'lasecho. You need to know that Hashem will ultimately pay the correct reward. And it's interesting, these three different elements, learning Torah, responding to the outside world, and knowing deep down that the truth ultimately will come out. And the ones that do the right thing, Hashem can pay them their just reward. We all need to think about, at some point, how do we respond to questions. Now, if you're a rabbi, then wherever you go, people will ask you, excuse me, are you a rabbi? Can I ask you, do you mind if I ask you a question? And that's a very common thing that we encounter. But the truth is, any from person, you're out there in the airport, you're davening, you're wearing a yarmulke, whatever it is that attracts attention, people will come over to you and say, can I ask you, do you mind if I ask you? Now, we're going to discuss different types of questions and what the hashkafa is of how we answer these questions. But before we even go there, the single factor that will define whether you succeed in answering the question or not is, any takers? What is the single factor that will succeed in whether you, it will define whether you succeed in answering the question or not?
Comes from the heart.
Comes from the heart. Very good.
Depends on the question.
Okay, that's already looking at the question, but what did Mark mean when he said it comes from the heart?
Did you
answer without patronizing? The core issue over here, and I believe this is the issue that we're here today to explore, is Mark saying, does it come from the heart? How confident are you in the answer? That means, do you believe the answer? Because if you're a salesman and you're selling something, but you know that your product is damaged or defective, no matter how, I mean, you can use techniques and all kinds of things and you might succeed in selling. But the salesman that's going to sell is a salesman that has a real product and believes in the product. So this exercise is very important for us because it's also going to highlight for us how much do I believe this stuff, to put it in very blunt terms? Because if I don't buy into it, and I'm doing it because of some superficial or external reason, the question is going to deeply unsettle me, and that comes across. Because as we all know, in communication, 80 or 90% of communication is nonverbal. And the words that you happen to throw out are a very small part of how much you are going to get the message across to someone else. And the way that we answer, the confidence, the simchas achayim, the way that we live that particular answer will be far more telling than all the fancy, clever philosophical things that we could possibly learn over here today. So again, the starting point is, and this is whether someone ever asks you a question, this exercise is very important. Someone may never come and ask you these questions, but do you have the answer? And that's what I wrote in point number two. The most important person to answer to is in fact yourself. That means the Dama Shetashiv La'apikoires is answering that guy in the airport or on the bus or at the office or whatever who's challenging you. But the biggest apikoires is the Yetzer Hara inside of us. We all have this voice that's coming and saying, you know, how do you know that and why are you doing all this stuff? And that's natural, that's normal. We all have that voice inside of us. And we all need Dama Shetashiv La'apikoires. We have to have the answers. We have to know how to respond to the internal questioning as well. And the more that we do this, the more confident we become and the more assured we become and we develop our strength and our emunah and become better Jews. So again, the point over here is, this is not a rabbi's boot camp of like training you how to answer the questions that you might get. You may never get questions, but the exercise is crucial, it's critical, and that's what Rabbi Elazar was saying. So I think that's really the starting point of this exercise. Now, I had an interest in my starting point with this personally. About 20-something years ago, I started giving shiurim to college students. I happened to be younger than them. I was fresh out of yeshiva. And it so happened, I had a few associates, and they invited a few friends. And we started learning together on a Thursday night, like a parasha shiur. And at the same time, I came across a series of shiurim by a rabbi by the name of Rav David Orlovsky, who teaches at Or Sameach in Israel, a program of Or LeGoyim. And I see some people already lighting up knowing what I'm talking about. Rabbi Orlovsky trains rabbis in this Or LeGoyim program, which is a program run by Or Sameach. In fact, Rabbi Auerbach was one of the teachers over there in the very early days. He, in fact, I think, ran the program. And the program trains rabbis when they're going to go out there into the big wide world what to do. And Rabbi Orlovsky's speciality is training rabbis how to answer questions. Now, it's the most intriguing series. And in fact, we're not going to do justice to it over here. And if you want to do it on your own, I can refer you to where you can find it. But Rabbi Orlovsky's speciality is how to answer questions. He runs a 13-hour series for rabbis. And he has broken it down into every possible question you'll ever be asked as a rabbi. Now, that doesn't mean that he summarized the whole Shulchan Aruch. We're not talking here about halachic questions. We're talking about the questions that people ask you generally about Judaism, Hashkafa. And it's fascinating because when you boil it down, there's only about 200 or 300 questions. And then when you know those questions, you basically are kitted out for the rest of your life as a rabbi, because these questions come up all the time, but they all are often just the same thing in different packages. And once you have a good response to them, so then the response is going to be valid always. Again, the point of Iho is it's not just technique and strategy, it's about authenticity. But it's about learning and knowing what the true content is and the best way to answer these things. So that's our starting point. I think this exercise is so important. I think it's not done enough. I think it's not done enough with young Jewish children. I think religious children, is this strange paradox where there's like a stage where they're not allowed to ask, and then there's a stage when they're expected to know, and there isn't any point in between where they got the answers to these basic questions in Hashkafa. It's a mistake, and you know, I think that Balei Tshuva parents often assume that because the child's growing up from, he has all the answers. He knows all the basics of Yiddishkeit. Somehow it came through in vitro as he was in the mother's womb. All the things that the Balei Tshuva parent discovered in their own journey just somehow got communicated to the child, and somehow the child knows all these basics of Emunah. And we sometimes don't get around to answering these questions. Now, for me, this was an amazing experience because there I was, FFB kid, teaching college students who were not religious at the time. And I came across this series of how to answer questions. So there I was, busy listening to their recordings, because there I needed to know what to say to all these people when they asked me the questions. The funny thing was that I was actually learning myself those basics. And as much as I was pretending that I was just preparing for their questions, I got to confront many basic questions about Yiddishkeit that I would not have come across without this concept of Dharma Shatashiv, without exploring the question of how do you answer other people's questions. So even if you never get the questions, to understand yourself and to get a deeper understanding, it's a very confrontational way to learn. You see, if you pick up now a philosophical book, Derech Hashem, it's like very philosophical and abstract. When I start pointing hard questions at you, you then have to come up with the answer, not a answer. You have to come up with something that really satisfies the question, not just an academic theoretical response. And we'll see as we go along that Rabbi Orlovsky's approach is very hard-hitting. Come inside, find a seat. Rabbi Orlovsky's approach happens to be very hard-hitting. We'll see when it's appropriate to be hard-hitting and when not. But the basic thing is going to be we need to know how to answer questions, and we need to know how to answer them cleanly, cleanly and clearly for ourselves and for the people around us. Now, where do we start? What's the basis of, before we even start looking at specific questions, let's look at the philosophy or the background, the strategy of how you answer questions. Where are we going to look in the Torah to know how to answer questions? Very simple, the Haggadah. We know that on Pesach night is all about questions. And in fact, the Haggadah tells us that there are four types of sons, which means that there are four types of questions. And the Haggadah didn't make this up. The Haggadah got it from the Torah itself. We know, and you can see in source number 2 over here, Keneged Arba Bonim Dibra Torah. The Torah tells you about four different types of sons, which means four different styles of questions. And when you're out there, if you're a rabbi and even if you're not, you have to learn straight away, when you hear someone asking a question, where is this coming from? Is this coming from the Chacham, the Rosha, the Tam, or the She'enu Yodei Lish'ol? And it's complex, because in one person you can have at times a Rosha type question, or you can have a Chacham type question. And the Haggadah gives us brilliant strategy as to how to answer these questions, because the same question coming from different people in different circumstances needs a completely different type of response. What are they? Let's look. Keneged Arba Bonim Dibra Torah. Echad Chacham. What's the Chacham? The Chacham wants to know Ma'ha'edos V'achukim V'amishpatim. Now this is a pleasure. This is someone that really wants to know. And he requests information from you. This is the person that if you say to him, I can recommend an excellent book on the subject, they'll actually go and read the book. And if you tell them, and you spend, say, this is going to take a few minutes, come sit with me, they actually have an innate curiosity and they want the answer. They deeply want the truth, they're searching for the answer. And one of the crucial things that's going to be in this whole exercise is curiosity. I think that the Chacham is driven by something called curiosity. He wants to know the information, and you give him the information. And by the way, you don't always have to have it, because often there'll be questions that you don't have the answer to. And then you say, I'll refer you to so-and-so. Why don't you go and talk to so-and-so? Or I'll look into it for you. And that person will be satisfied with that. And one just can be completely authentic and open with such a person. Share with them the knowledge you have. Direct them where you think they should go. That's a Chacham, and that's not really the subject of today. Because that's not Dharma Shatashiv L'Apikoiris. You're not responding to an Apikoiris, which is someone that's trying to break out of the framework. That's a person who's like every good Jew who's trying to find the truth. Great. Rosha. Now, Rosha Mahu Oimer, what does the Rosha say? Now, I want to point out, and this is often mentioned, that there's actually five sons. The Haggadah talks about four. Who's the fifth son? The one that didn't show up. Right, the Rosha is there, and he's blustering, and he's aggressive, and saying all kinds of rude things at your Shabbos table, and making snide remarks. But when you say to him, "What are you doing here?" and this is like in the words of Rabbi Orlovsky, it's like, "No, I want to be here, and it's family, and it's Friday night, and no, but why don't you go? No, it's nice here, but because he wants to be there. There's something deep down that's drawing him there." And yet he's asking these questions. And the questions are not a search for information. And this is very important to understand. Many people ask questions, but they're not really questions. The Rosha is not saying, please will you provide me this information that I'm curious about. The Rosha is actually challenging you. He's challenging you with something that is in fact his defense mechanism. And this is so crucial for us to understand. We all live amongst many people who live different lifestyles to us. And we should realize that when you're at a setting where there is religious practice taking place, there is a huge tvia, there is a huge, like almost incrimination of someone who's not keeping that. And you're asking them a question. When you invite someone to the Shabbos table and you keep in Shabbos and he's not, there is a big hidden question that's going on over here that he's feeling. That is, why are you not doing the same thing as us? So when he in the middle of the meal says, like, you know, I can't believe and relate and whatever, what he's really doing is not a question, it's actually an answer. It's an answer to the invisible question that's being asked of him, which is, why are you not doing the same thing? This is so important to understand, that so often we make the mistake of trying to answer an answer. You can't answer an answer, you can only answer a question. And therefore, we have to have a different strategy with someone that is not asking a question, but is in fact giving an answer. Now, this is the famous story of, I think it was Rav Chaim Volozhin. He had some students who left the yeshiva and went off the derech, and he bumped them many years later, and they were completely hefker and disconnected from Yiddishkeit. And he said to them, why did you leave? And they said, no, we had questions. He said to them, tell me something. Did you first want to leave and then have questions? Or did you first have questions and then want to leave? Because very often the question is just a justification. It's just a defense. And then I can't answer that question because you don't actually want to know the answer. The well-known story about Rav Noach Weinberg, who was an Oxford student, who was right, PhD, on the question of atheism. And this student arrived in Jerusalem at the very end of his 4 years of research, and he asked for a meeting with Rav Noach Weinberg and said to him, I'm just completing my dissertation, and I would like to give you an opportunity to respond. Convince me otherwise, you know, before I put my closing arguments. Now, that's such a temptation for a rabbi to launch into his finest proof of the existence of God or whatever it is. Rav Noach Weinberg did something else. He said, tell me something. If I were to come here now and in the next 10 minutes mathematically prove to you the existence of God, how would you feel about the last 4 years of your work? And the guy said, I would be devastated. And Rav Noach Weinberg turned around to him and he said, well, then that's not an intellectually honest study that you've been doing. When you have such strong emotional, what we call cognitive dissonance about the outcome that you want, so then you're not really asking a question. You're not really looking for the truth. And the Rosha is someone that's got a block. He's got a problem. And you have to help him with the problem. Now, the Haggadah says, Hakei es Shinov. Now, people often mistakenly confuse that word, hakei. It's not with a kaf. With a kaf, hakei means to hit. It does not mean punch out his teeth. Hakei means to blunt his teeth. Blunt means that there's something that's in the way. You've got to take the sharp edge off what he's saying, because behind that is something softer. Behind that is the Yiddish neshama that wants to be there. But until we get this question out the way, we can't talk. And you know, Rabbi Orlovsky, who's a master in this and has spent many, many years attending, you know, camps with teenage kids who have got all these questions, and he's mastered how to respond. And his basic thing is, Hakei es Shinov, if we can just get this thing out the way, and sometimes in quite a sharp way, Hakei es Shinov is to answer strongly. It's like, oh, well, I think all the rabbis don't have answers. Like, this is a typical kind of script he describes. Someone will say to you, you know what, I don't want to be Jewish or religious Jew because, you know, whenever I ask questions, the rabbis don't have answers. So his response is, okay, fire away, I'll answer your questions. And one by one, they come at him with their standard trope of all these things that they've rehearsed that are the justification of their lifestyle. And he knocks them off one by one in a very sharp way, because once you okay, fine, now we've answered all the questions, so now what next? And then it puts the person in the space where you've removed that defense and we can now talk. So Hakei es Shinov is about knocking out the question. We'll speak about that a little bit more in a moment. What's important to understand is the Torah does have the answers. The Torah has a strategy for how to deal with each of these types of questions. Now,
we're going to discuss how the question, how the answer the Torah gives is like
not really. I think that would be more focused when we come to around the Pesach time. We're going to look at it in much more hands-on, practical ways of the kind of questions we get as opposed to the specific scenario described in the Haggadah. But the philosophy or the strategy that comes from the Haggadah is we have to get the question out the way so that we can actually get to the real stuff. What's the real issue that's cooking behind over here for this particular person? Rishaim are actually nice to work with. And what I've written over here is because there's someone that's engaging with you. There's someone that's coming at you. And if he's coming at you, it means that there's something driving him. And even if it looks like it's negative, you can turn that energy around to something positive. There's a neshama that's fighting over here. There's someone that's searching, and even if he's got these blocks, he is searching for something. We're going to see in a moment the next two are much harder to work with. A tam, and especially a she'eino yodea lish'ol, because a she'eino yodea lish'ol is just inert, just passive, like a lump. He's not really interested. He's not driven by anything. And if you're not driven by anything, how do you work with such a person? And I must tell you, we'll see that this is really the biggest tragedy of our generation. We have a door, we have a generation that is not searching. And the reason why we're not searching, and this is a bigger discussion, which is not for now, about the effects of technology. But just to understand briefly, I came across a book review of a book that just came out in the secular world about the power of curiosity. And one of the things that they spoke about was how technology has destroyed curiosity, because curiosity is about something called a knowledge gap. It's when I'm sitting here and there's a question. There's something that I don't understand. Like, how do they generate electricity from hydroelectric dam? Something random. Whatever it is that piques my interest, and at that point there's a tension that starts rising inside of me that wants to know, where did the world come from? How could it be that evolution explains all of it? Whatever it is that drives the person, that tension creates an energy, and the energy causes the person to start seeking out the truth. Technology fills the gap and doesn't allow the tension to build. As you're clicking away, surfing means that I go from one piece of information to the next. There isn't really a time when there is that ache of not having information, and it actually can deeply affect our need to search for something, and often just fill it with either entertainment or some instant gratification of knowledge, even if it's knowledge. The intriguing thing is, even if you're giving someone information and knowledge, you're deadening the sense of curiosity, which is so crucial for the search. And this is one of our big challenges today of She'eino yodea lishol, we're at petachloi. You have to try and stimulate them. I mean, I know I've gone to give shirim to, you know, kids that are not connected at all to anything. You know, it's not like I just wish they would come at me with some really hard philosophical question. Halavai, right? It's just like, you know, trying to get them to unplug the iPod and disengage from Facebook and the WhatsApp that's just come through. Hi, Aaron Tivia, we're just busy here. Okay. Well, this is not the duff. The duff was before Aaron Tivia.
Why is this so big?
That's a different shir, Aaron Tivia, okay?
What's she at?
Okay.
It's back.
Yes, you can come later. Okay, he's a yodea lishol, Baruch Hashem. He asks good questions. but the challenge of our door really is to try and get some questions, just to stimulate a question. Halavai that you would be attacking me, then I would be able to engage with you. And this generation is drifting away. It's drifting away because there isn't any energy, not negative or positive energy. I was never there, but my parents' generation, I think many of the people over here, you know, in the 70s and 80s when they were searching for Yiddishkeit, if you advertised the shir, the room would fill up with people that had no connection to Yiddishkeit but were desperate to have answers to life's big questions. Today there aren't life's big questions other than what's the next, you know, music video on MTV or there's no urge to search. So this is one of our big challenges that halavai we had some more rishoim in that sense of people that were coming at us that we could then engage with. But it says at petachloi, we have to try and stimulate those questions. We give sushi, we have learn and earn, we have all of these different things to try and get the people there and then hopefully unplug them for a few seconds long enough to actually throw out some sort of controversial idea that might stimulate someone to actually engage, because that's then the roots of progress and growth. Fine. Now, let's go on, and our real focus over here is going to be on what we're calling the Rasha, but we're not sort of labeling Jewish people as Rishoim, but the type of Rasha type question, and by the way, we even ourselves have these questions internally, it's the challenging question that says, Ma ha'avoida hazois lochem? What is this work? What is this about? Like, why should I really come to Slichas next week? It's so early and it's going to make me tired. That's the question of the Rasha that needs to be responded to in a strong way, because we have to strip away the negativity of it, and beneath that is some positive energy. Now, a few rules of engagement. You can see here I've got at the bottom of the page. The rules of engagement. How do you engage with someone that is coming at you? We all had this, really. Invite non-religious relatives to a Shabbos meal, to a Pesach Seder, and they say something flippant, they say something confrontational. And what's very important, I think it's crucial, someone once said to me that we're far too tolerant of apikorsis at our tables. You know, he was saying that, you know, someone will speak badly about Israel, or he'll say something positive about the Palestinians, and the whole table will jump on him. But someone will speak against HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say something like Hashem doesn't ever listen to tefillahs or whatever it is, and we don't respond. And the Mefarshim on that mission at the top of the page say, you have to respond. You cannot stand by when someone has just said something like that. Not only because he needs the information, but because Chilul Hashem, that we all went down, and it erodes our own sense of conviction and our own sense of emunah if we don't respond to these things. You cannot stand by when someone at the Shabbos table or at the Kiddush or wherever it is says something that is problematic. We have to then respond for ourselves, for the people around us, to stand up for Kavod Shamayim and for people's commitment to the Avodah. So, the rules of engagement. Firstly, understand the question. This is crucial. There are many subtle variations to the same question. And one of the best things you can say to someone is, what do you mean? Because often they'll say, you know, Rabbi, why do bad things happen to good people? Now that's just a rehearsed standard line. Everybody's heard it. They know that it makes the rabbi start stuttering and stammering. And therefore they throw it out. But you don't know where this is coming from. Sometimes the guy will have lo yaleinu, his spouse is dying of cancer. And that's what's driving the question. Other times it could be just some teenager that knows that it gets the rabbi worked up. Or it could be someone who's a Holocaust survivor. You know, and without knowing what's driving the question, what do you actually mean? You know, my dog died last week, and like I'm trying to go through this trauma and understand why did God do this? That's a very different question. And before I dive into my whole big, you know, speech, you got to first understand the question. I mean, there's that old story about Johnny that came home and he said to his dad, like, Daddy, where do I come from? You know, and the dad said, oh my gosh, here we go. And like he launched into this whole speech about the birds and the bees. And then a few minutes later, like this kid's looking a bit shell-shocked. And he says, funny, because my friend at school told me he comes from Bloemfontein, you know, like. You know, so it's about like really trying to understand what is the person looking for, what is the question that's being asked, because before we can give the right answer, we have to understand that we're addressing the right question. The next point, and maybe this is perhaps the most choshuv point to make this whole session, is don't apologize. Do not be apologetic and defensive. It's a very unhealthy thing that we all start becoming apologetic and defensive. And you have to ask yourself, why am I apologizing for this? Do I really believe it? And if I believe in it, I come out with all guns blazing. Now, not because I'm aggressive and not because I want to put someone else down, but if someone has said something at the table or asked a question about something, and I am all polite and apologetic because I think that's the way a religious Jew is supposed to be, I'm making a huge mistake. First of all, I have to ask myself, why am I so defensive and apologetic? Why am I not? I don't know. I have the confidence. And secondly, it's not going to do anything. It's not going to do anything when, you know, and examples, personally, I've had these kind of examples. You know, people will say, Rabbi, why is it that, you know, in Mea Shearim, they're so abusive to their wives? Like, or that kind of thing. Now, what do people say? So in that kind of discussion, or religious Jews do this, or in those ultra-religious neighborhoods, they do such and such. So we start becoming all defensive. And no, well, you see, and maybe, and it's not all, it's just some. And by the time you're done, the person's sensed in your energy that, like, you don't really know. And you kind of agree that this is a problem. And the truth is that you have to come out with all guns blazing. Have you ever been to the police station in B'nai Brak and asked them how many incidents of domestic violence there are in B'nai Brak compared to in Sandton and Hyde Park? Do you have any idea, right, that this is one of the lowest in the world? Right? Who told you to speak in such a general way about an entire population? Where do you come from? In my circles, we don't generalize about populations, especially without the knowledge. I've personally been to Mea Shearim, and they don't dehumanize women by putting them all over the billboards. This is a place that has the highest respect for the opposite gender that I've ever seen. How dare you speak like that against the population that is, you know? And that kind of response says to the person, you know what, maybe I'm, and that's Hakeh's Shinov. Because then once you've stripped away the stupid little thing that he had running around his head, that was his defense, that if I ever became religious, I'm going to start beating my wife, chas v'shalom. And it's a shtuyot, it's a nonsense. There was just a, and the greatest people that I've ever met have the holiest relationships. And because, you know, the news loves to make it, you know, man bites dog is much better news than dog bites man. In other words, if something happened in one of these places, the news is, the media is all over it, because dafka, that's the proof that this is something that's unusual. And those are the kind of responses that we need to have. In that way, first of all, we're dealing with an issue in ourselves, which is, do I believe in this? And you really have to ask yourself, do you? And second of all, that's the way to strip away the question. And then the person says, you know what, it's right. Okay, there's a very, Rabbi Orlovsky has one particular speciality, and this is sort of maybe summarizes the whole approach in the most amazing way. He deals a lot with like secular modern kids who are out there in mixed gender schools, and you know, understand they get a bit involved in religion, but understand that it comes with certain limitations. And often, and in fact, when you speak to teenagers and open up the floor and say, we're going to have, you know, they call it either ask the rabbi or roast the rabbi, you know, they have these sessions where they allow them to ask whatever question they want. You know, the first question that will always come up is something along the lines of, they call it Bli in South Africa or Shomer Nagia. Basically, why are all these constraints about male and female, and what's going on, and what's the problem? And that's a very typical kind of question that comes up in these environments, as would in a secular day school in South Africa. In fact, these are the, you know, if you want me to be religious, this is the first issue that comes up. Yes, go ahead. Yeah, we're going to get to that, please God. Okay, so I'm first illustrating the strategy of answering questions, and this is about knocking the question out the way. So he, for many years, used to do summer camps in NCSY and these places in America, and this was the standard question. And for many years, he tried to think, what is the strategy to answer this particular question? And what he came out with, that is, to boys' groups, okay, and this, I mean, it's amusing and it's a little bit grob, but just that you should understand that I don't have to play by your rules. You're setting the agenda of this discussion. I'm going to break out of that agenda. So when in his new strategy, what he developed, and it takes about 10 seconds and the question's gone, and you move on to more important things. And that is, someone puts up their hand and says, so Rabbi, why can't we just hold hands? Right? That's the question. That's how they're formulating the question. And he stops for a moment and he says, Tom, he's like, you liar. You don't just want to hold hands. Right? And within about 10 seconds, the room goes silent. Right? And you see, but I've shown you up for the truth behind your question. You're trying to unnerve me and unseat me. And the standard response of many rabbis will be, no, well, you see, the Chachamim and the Chazal, they understood and they led to this. Well, I don't think that, and you think that, and I think this. And before we finish, 10 minutes later, we're still arguing, right? But if I show you up for what's behind the question, and let's be honest with each other, then we can now move on and get to further discussion. So again, if we look at point number one, is understand the question. That means often when someone asks you a question, turn it around and say, excuse me, what do you mean? The best thing to do is to say, what do you mean? The second thing is, don't apologize. Hakei es shinov is not because I'm trying to be nasty, because I'm trying to smash someone. I'm actually trying to help them by getting the question out the way. Don't be shy, and don't be apologetic and defensive. Number three is the 30-second rule. And this is why he teaches this course, is because most people won't give you more than 30 seconds. If you haven't come with the answer within the first 30 seconds of your speech, they say, oh, these religious Jews, they don't really have the answers. And they move on, and they zone out. Okay, and he said this rule about 15 years ago, and since then, I think our attention spans have not improved, unfortunately. So the reality is, you have to have the answer, like this example I gave you. Okay, again, it's a bit of a grub example with these teenagers. But in 5 seconds, the question's out the way. Because if you launched into a whole speech trying to explain to them what it means, Arias, and what it means, like Aloy Sikravu and Tshuva of Reb Moshe, and by the time you're done, they just zoned out. So it's very important, by the way, to a chacham who's looking for information, you've got time because the person has a curiosity. But for this guy that's got a defense that says, I'm not doing this because I've got this question and no one ever answers it, if you don't answer it clearly and quickly and strongly, then the guy moves on. Point number four, don't give every possible opinion. To the chacham, you can say that in the question of what happens after Tchias HaMeisim, there's a machloikis between the Rambam and the Ravid. And you can go and present different shittas of the Ramchal and the this and the that in Hashkafa as to what the answer is to this question. Whereas when it comes to a Rosha, when I'm saying a Rosha, I don't mean someone who's a Rosha, I mean the Rosha type question of someone who's challenging, you need the most effective answer. How do we know that the Torah is true and from Sinai has multiple proofs? Because it is true. You have to believe that. But if I'm going to present, well, there's the Kuzari, and there's also, you know, the Rav Yisrael Salanta has an answer, and this is not, I've got to go through all those and find the single most hard-hitting one that requires no debate and discussion. Now, all of them will stand ultimately, but most of these people are not going to give you the time of day to actually debate it. And therefore, I have to come with the most clear and hard-hitting response. So that's point number 4 at the bottom of the first page. And point number 5 is don't be afraid to say I don't know, but say it with confidence. And this is an important area, especially if one's not a rabbi and one doesn't necessarily have all the background and the training. To say, someone who asks you a philosophical question and you don't know the answer, so how come you're still religious? If there's such a question and you don't know the answer to it, surely you should have also thrown off everything like me. What's the response? That's not true. Just because there's something that doesn't add up for me doesn't mean that I haven't seen enough to make me believe and know that this is true. You know, if once your father does something that looks like it was a bit distrustful to you, a father looks like he betrayed you in some sort of subtle way, but for the last 30 years or 50 years or whatever it is, your father has taken care of your every need and has been so loyal to you, and there's one thing that he did which was just out of character or doesn't make sense, I'm comfortable to live with that and I may never understand. But I have to be careful to say that with confidence. I don't know. I'll talk to my rabbi if I get around to it. And by the way, even if I don't get around to it, that's not going to change my understanding that my father is reliable and that the Torah is true because of all else that I've discovered. What I've just said now is a summary of the concept of emunah. Emunah doesn't mean that I have all the truth, the MS. It means that I've seen enough to go on it and I therefore live by that truth. Fine. That's really the background. And now we've got 2 or 3 minutes. I'm going to run quickly through a few of the basic questions. Please God, we have another session where we'll look at some of the other one. Question number 1 on the second page. How do I know that there is a God? Now this question comes up in many different forms. Most of the time, it's not really what people are asking. That means a person who comes to you, and by the way, they won't even always formulate it as a question. They'll say, Rabbi, I'm an atheist. And what's the answer to that? Very nice. Yeah, I'm a rabbi. You know, he's not. You know, until you ask me a question, I'm not going to get my, you know, in a knot to try and answer you. This is something very important. Like as soon as you see this person lining up for a question, we all start getting like sweating under the collar because he's going to ask that question that like always makes me feel very nervous. You're an atheist, very nice. You know, and Rabbi Olofsky speaks on this share. Like he gets teenagers one after the other. You know, they put up their hand in his session. He says, Rabbi, I'm an atheist. Fantastic, very nice. Pleased to meet you. What do you mean? Well, I was. So what do you have? You read? Have you read the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim? Have you read? Plato? Maybe. Okay, you've done a full research. Have you read Immanuel Kant? Tell me this research you've done. Did you ever read Derech Hashem? You know. So tell me, what you're really saying is that you were sitting at the back of the bus one day and you decided you're an atheist. You're not an atheist, you're an idiot. That was the way he expressed it, right? Okay. And very often this is not the point. It's not really someone who's gone through an intensive philosophical research. You know, they've done more research about the new iPhone that they bought than about this important question of whether there's a God in the world that means I have to change my entire life. So for me to get all stressed out because you just made this random statement of I'm an atheist is silly. So very nice, you're an atheist. No, what I want to know is how am I supposed to know? Now, if that's a chacham question, you can say to the person, look, we need to discuss this. It's going to take more than 10 seconds to answer this question. Very often they'll say, no, don't worry, I'm fine, right? Because they're not really that interested. But someone that's interested, we can go into proofs and discussions, which we can do even at a different time because we don't have time now. But the point that I want to make over here is most people believe in God. Very interesting thing. In some form or another, the majority of the world are religious. Majority of the world, in fact, believe that the Torah was given at Har Sinai because of the Christians and the Muslims and the Jews. Add them all together, it's about 4 billion out of the 7 billion people in the world. Most people don't have a problem that there was an infinite power that created the world. Most people are asking something else, and that is, Rabbi, I don't believe in Hashgacha. My definition of God doesn't include an involvement in God in every day of my life. And by the way, Rav Leuchter speaks out, that is what Emunah is. Emunah is not I believe in a creator. Emunah means I believe in a God that is constantly involved in my life on a daily and minute-to-minute basis. And that's what disturbs people. And often what's disturbing them is actually not whether there is a God. They deep down know that there's a creator, and they know that he's running the world, but they can't understand what's going on in their life, and often they're angry. And if we can sort out what the question is that you're asking, and the person's saying, I'm angry at God because, you know, I met someone and they had their spouse of 30 years passed away, you know, and he said, I don't believe in God. And when you actually sort it out, what he's actually saying is, Rabbi, I'm really hurting. I'm really upset and I don't understand this. And then if we can come to that, we can start to address the real question. Most people are asking those type of things, and just because you can prove the existence of creation and the Big Bang and Einstein and all that stuff, which we can talk about, does not mean that you've answered the real question. Often these people need a lot of compassion and sympathy to that you say, wow, you've lost so much. What a tragedy. I could understand that you're upset. In fact, you so much believe in God that you're angry with him. The irony is you've actually turned that whole thing around and the person's on the same page as you 99%. And then we have to realize there's a different question, which is why do bad things happen to good people? And we're going to wrap up over here. And that is most people believe. And that belief comes from a very deep place inside of them. The quote over here from the Tanya speaks about the fact that there's something super rational about the knowledge of God. You can know God from the inside, not from the outside. And that's what you actually want to try and bring out in people. When we say Shema, that there's a God in the world, we don't look around and read the science books. We cover our eyes and look deep inside ourselves. Because the same way that we know that we have a neshama, we also know deep down that there's a creator and our neshama is connected to that. Engaging with people in very big academic, scientific proofs, backwards and forwards, often is counterproductive, although there is a place for that which we have to understand. But the crucial thing, if you can, is to bring a person into that inner knowledge which every Jew has. The Tanya writes here that many koifrim, many people that deny the existence of God, will give up their life for God. If you put a gun to their head, or you put them in the dungeon in the Spanish Inquisition, that yesurim and that call to action will strip away all the nonsense and the shtuyot and all these questions and stories, and out will come this person who's really deeply believes in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're going to stop over here, and please God, we'll pick up the next session, which is coming up in a week or two, about the further about questions that people ask.